Okay, let's go ahead and get started. Since we're in Switzerland, our Rolex clock back there tells us we must start now. So we'll go ahead and get started. I'm Travis Wright. I'm the Director of Product Management at Cyrosyn, formerly at Microsoft for 11 years as a Principal Program Manager there. Worked for many years on Service Manager, and about a year ago I left Microsoft to join Cyrosyn full-time. What I'd like to do today is just give a presentation on Service Manager performance and scale best practices. If you're in this room, I'm guessing you have Service Manager deployed already. Anybody in this room not already using Service Manager? Okay, a couple of people. All right, so you guys are you're getting ahead of the game. This is good. You guys are gonna know how to deploy Service Manager the right way from the beginning, so you don't have the pain of bad performance. Everybody else in the room, I assume, has Service Manager deployed, and how many people would say they have good performance with Service Manager? Not very many hands. I love that. This guy's got his foam finger doing this. That's awesome. Okay. So I assume everybody has great performance then. Not just good, it's great. All right, except for Jedi hand in the back there with the finger down. All right, so today we're going to talk about how to make your Service Manager performance better. It's definitely an art to get Service Manager to perform at scale. What is the largest deployment of Service Manager we have in the room? Let's just, by raise of hands, how many people have a Service Manager deployment that's used for more than 500 people? Okay, keep your hand up. More than 1,000. More than 2,000, more than 5,000, more than 7,000, 10,000. Okay, Andreas, how many?
15.
Okay, good. Right, okay, good. Thanks for clarifying. That's good. All right, 15,000, that's good. All right, so, and how's the performance on that one? It's okay, right? You did it, right? So it's good. Yeah. All right. Okay. So this is normally the kind of conversation I have with people when it comes to Service Manager performance and scalability. People come to me and they say, hey, can Service Manager scale to 500,000 users? That depends. What do they want to do with it? And they say, oh, they want to do automated request fulfillment for pencil sharpener batteries. All right. So no incident management, no CMDB. Just batteries. Okay, how many often do people need batteries? And they say, okay, well, once a year. So I'm like, all right, let's do the math then. So 500,000 people, divide that by 12 months, 22 working days in the year, 8 hours a day in a working day. And so basically, and there's 60 minutes in a working hour. So we end up with about 3.9 requests per workday minute. All right, that's just simple math. We can all do division, right? And then I say, all right, so let's compare that to what we tested while we were back as Service Manager when we released Service Manager. We tested 50,000 users, each of them submitting two incidents, two service requests, and a change request per month. And then you kind of do the same math, and you figure out that that's a rate of about 18.9 work items per workday minute. That's what we tested to. And 18.9 is greater than 3.9, so sure, that should be fine. That's kind of the logic that you could go through, right? But you have to kind of understand what it is that Microsoft has tested. Try to compare that to what it is you want Service Manager to be able to do, and then figure out kind of whether or not what you want to do is possible or not. All right, but there's a lot of variables that are involved here. So we're going to talk today about how to kind of look at those variables and how to configure Service Manager for optimum performance. Oh, come on, my clicker's not gonna work. All right. So, our goals today is how to answer these types of performance and scale best questions that we get. We wanna talk about best practices for performance and scalability, and I want to share some test results that I had while I was at Microsoft, and I did a very big performance and test scale test there, and I just want to share the results of that test with you and kind of what the tweaks were that I made in order to be able to get to a very high scale. So generally speaking, if somebody comes to you and says, I want to use Service Manager, and I'm going to use all the functionality of Service Manager, and they've got less than 20,000 people in their organization, then they should be able to use the standard hardware recommendations, and they will be fine. The performance may not be great depending upon how you configure things, but it should be able to scale to that. If an organization has anywhere from 20 to 50,000 users, and they want to use all the functionality of Service Manager, then they need to have a SQL Server database that has at least 32 gigs of RAM, and then they should be fine as well. If they're larger than 50,000, you're probably not in Europe. It's probably China or the United States or something, but we do have customers that have deployed Service Manager at a scale greater than 50,000 users. And in those scenarios, it becomes more of a conversation about what exactly it is they want to do. Maybe there's multiple management groups. Maybe there's some special hardware. It just becomes more of a conversation. So, all right. So let's, I'm going to skip a few slides just because this slide deck was originally intended to be an hour and 15 minute session. So basically, when we went to test Service Manager, we had some different parameters to our test plan. We had some assumptions that we made. The first assumption that we made was that for every user in an organization, they have one device. Some organizations, they have multiple devices per user. Some organizations have multiple users per device. Some people don't even have devices that are being managed by IT. So we just kind of said, all right, let's just do a one-to-one association of users to computers. We went and talked to Microsoft IT and some other large customers and asked them to give us a ratio of the number of work items that were created per user. So you figure Microsoft is an organization with about 100,000 full-time employees, and they told us how many incidents were being created per month, and that included operations manager generated incidents. And you know, we figured out that basically, on average, each user in the organization was generating about 2 incidents per month and 2 service requests per month and 1 change request per month. And so we used those numbers as a way to, from a number of users, figure out how many work items would be created. Then you take some other assumptions, like there's 22 business work days per month, there's 8 business work hours per day, and that's the worst case scenario, right? If you have people working on a schedule where they're kind of working around the clock, around the globe, whatever, then you can spread the load out across time more. But if people are working in one location, they're all in the same time zone, they all work 5 work days a week, they all work Monday through Friday, they all work 8 to 5, that's the worst combination. So we tested for that. And if you have people working in multiple time zones and different schedules, and some people work on the weekend, that just makes it better because the workload gets distributed more. Okay, then we decided we were going to test all of the functionality of Service Manager at the same time. We're going to test all the data warehouse jobs running to do extract, transform, and load. We're going to run all the Active Directory connectors at this scale. So we're going to hook up to an Active Directory and have it be syncing in on a continuous basis, 50,000 users worth of information, 50,000 computers. We hooked up to a Config Manager database that was populated with 50,000 real computer records from Microsoft IT. And we had a number of concurrent consoles that we were simulating accessing the Service Manager data access service. And so we would test with about 100 concurrent consoles per management server was kind of the way that we would do it. And we would kind of scale it out to multiple management servers. And we would also implement some customizations, so form customizations or data model extensions, or we would create notifications, subscriptions, custom workflows, some of those kinds of things to simulate what a customer would normally do in a production environment. So we tried to create as close as we could to a real-world load for performance testing. All right, so those are kind of the parameters we used. Now, when you go to figure out what your performance is going to be, one of the questions you have to ask yourself is, what is the storage volume that we're going to have? So that's the amount of data that's going to be generated and stored on disk. And the second question you have to ask is, what is our transaction volume? And so the transaction volume is the number of work items that are created, the number of CIs that are being imported into the database. That's the kind of day-to-day flow of data in and out of the system. And then you can kind of get into conversations about what kind of hardware you need to commit to the solution. So when you talk about quantity of data, in general, the bigger your database, the slower every query runs. And so you want to minimize, ideally, the amount of data that you have in your database. And certain types of data in Service Manager can impact performance more than others. An example of this is contained data in the data model has a big impact on performance. And the reason for that is because there's this one table in the Service Manager database that stores the hierarchy of relationships of objects. And it compresses down the relationships. So for example, the data model is defined that a computer contains a SQL server, contains a database. So in this table, there will be a row for a computer contains SQL server, a row for a computer contains, a computer contains a SQL server contains a database, and there will also be a row for the computer contains the database. And so you can query the table and you can say, find me all the databases that are contained by this computer. And I don't have to traverse through the SQL server to figure that out, I just get all the databases. And so this table makes all of the querying very efficient, but the size of that table can grow exponentially depending upon the type of data that you're bringing into the system. And so the deeper those relationships are, and the larger the number of items there are deep down in that relationship hierarchy, that can make this table get very, very big, and that can have an impact on performance. So there are certain types of data that you want to avoid bringing into the database if you can, so or generating in the database. So things like incidents with their action logs and activities, that's good data because an incident is related to an action log by a reference relationship. It's a peer-to-peer relationship. It's not a containment relationship. Service requests, same thing. Any kind of, incident is assigned to user or is the incident affected configuration item. Those are all reference relationships. They're peer-to-peer relationships. The computers that you bring in from Active Directory, those are just computer objects. The computers that you bring in from Operations Manager, that brings in a lot of contained data. And so that's like big, heavyweight data you bring in. File attachments are just binary representations of the files are stored in the database. That's fine. Although it will increase the size of your database, it doesn't have an impact on performance. Knowledge is also fine. But some of the bad data, if you will, is any data from Ops Manager is bad data because it's very heavy. So you want to limit the amount of data that you're bringing in from Operations Manager if possible, because it will populate that table in a big way. Any kind of activities that are contained by work items, also that's a containment relationship, especially when you get into situations where you have a service request that contains a parallel activity, that contains a sequential activity, that contains 20 different other activities. That multiple levels of hierarchy is the kind of bad data you don't want to have in your database. So what can you do about this? Especially work item data, you can control how much data is in there by setting your retention periods. So some customers are like, well, I want to keep my data forever. Well, great, but that's going to impact your performance. It might not at first, but as you go through time and you get more and more work items in your database, it's going to slow down your performance. So you want to keep your data retention periods as small as possible, keeping in mind that all of your data is being archived into the data warehouse on a continuous basis. So not all of the detail of the work item is archived to the data warehouse, but most of it is. And so you can rely on the data warehouse for long-term storage and reporting and keep your operational database fairly small so it has good performance. So if you kind of think about what we tested 50,000 users times 2 incidents per month times 3 months. That's the default retention period. And you can think about that there's a 2 service requests times 3 months. So you've got your 2 incidents, your 2 service requests, your 1 change request. You add all that up, and you end up with about 700,000, right? Now, if the customer wanted 15,000 users and each of those is going to generate 2 incidents per month, but they want to have a 36-month retention instead of 3 months by default, then that's going to generate a little over 1 million work items in that 3-year period. And that 1 million work items is more than the 750,000 that we tested to. So you can kind of look at how, even though the number of users is relatively small, 15,000 versus the 50,000 we tested to, because the work item retention period is 12 times as long, the amount of work items that ultimately ends up in the database is much greater than what we tested at. So you have to kind of factor in the number of users, the rate at which they're creating work items, and how long you're keeping the data for, and try to keep a total number of work items in your database to less than 750,000, because that's what we tested to. All right, so a few do's and don'ts about connectors at high scale. You want to schedule your connectors to run at different times so they're not running at the same time and trying to both update data in the database at the same time as well as use workflow management server resources. So scheduling the connectors is a little tricky. You have to export out the management packs in some cases, change the XML, and import it back in. There's no UI for it. But there's blog posts on how to do that. That's definitely a good suggestion. Don't run your connectors during business hours. You know, try to run them at night or whenever other people won't be using the system as much. The Active Directory connector has an issue with it where if it is syncing with one domain controller and then the next time it runs, it starts syncing with another domain controller, it will actually resync all of the data again instead of just doing an incremental sync. And so there's a trick that you can do with DNS where you effectively make the connector always connect to the same domain controller so that doesn't happen. So if you want to know how to do that, just let me know. The DCM workflow that runs as part of the Configuration Manager connector, that is very processor intensive. So unless you really need that DCM incident to be created from DCM, I suggest not using that particular feature. Don't sync null values in your Active Directory connectors. There's a checkbox there. You can check off, don't sync null in, because what will happen is you'll have some property in Service Manager, and if it's null in Active Directory, it'll overwrite the value you have in Service Manager with null. And first of all, you probably don't want that data loss to happen, and second of all, that just is always going to create this situation where you're continuously updating the data when you don't really need to be. And lastly is, if your data is not really changing in your data source, like Active Directory or Ops Manager or something, think about disabling your connector. If there's nothing really changing, just disable your connector until you need to actually bring the data in. All right, now each connector has a way to scope the data that's being brought in. So some people hook up to their Active Directory domain and they say, give me all the data. And you probably don't need all the data. Right? So if there is an OU that contains all your users and all you really need is the users, scope it down to just that OU. And you probably don't need computers to be synced in from Active Directory because you probably are already getting them from Operations Manager and Configuration Manager. So don't get computers from your Active Directory connector unless you don't have Ops Manager and Config Manager. So kind of really think about the scope of the data that you're bringing in and try to minimize it as much as possible. With Operations Manager, you can scope it by your allowed list, which is a list of classes that you can bring in. And so I would suggest scoping the data that you're bringing in from Operations Manager to only those classes that you actually really care about. And I think you'd be surprised if you run the commandlet, like get SCSM allowed list, you'll see a whole bunch of classes in there, and it's probably a bunch of things that you don't care about. And if you can trim that list down to a smaller number of classes, that'll be that much less data that you're bringing in from Operations Manager. And kind of going back to the point earlier, the Operations Manager data is, generally speaking, for performance, bad data, because it's got that deep hierarchy of data. Okay, so then you kind of have to think in terms of your transaction volume, what are the scenarios that we have here? So we talked about storage volume. Now we have to talk about transaction volume. So what did we test at Microsoft? We tested 50,000 users a month at 2 incidents, 2 service requests per month, and 1 change request per month. And if you factor that all out on 22 working days, and factor that all out, you end up with basically that we've got
23.67 work items per workday minute being created. That's the transaction rate that we tested at. So then you take a customer scenario where they have 100,000 users and they're creating incidents and service requests during business hours. Then you end up with 100,000 times two incidents and two service requests during business hours. That's 37.88 work items created per workday minute, which is a little, that's about 50% or so greater than what we were testing to. So that's probably not a good thing, right? You want to try to keep your transaction rate lower than what Microsoft tested to. All right. Okay, then we can talk about the degree of customization. And this is the part where I feel like we find the most problems with customer environments, where they've made some customizations that result in bad performance. And sometimes it's really just a matter of knowing what kinds of customizations impact performance and which ones don't. So all of those things that you see in the good customizations column, those do not impact performance. Okay, so you can create as many user roles as you want, you can create as many views as you want, you can extend the data model as much as you want. None of those things impact performance. The things in the bad customizations column, those can impact performance. So specifically things like notifications, subscriptions, workflows that you create, especially custom workflows, and workflows that are part of like group calc, as we call it. So group calc workflows are calculating configuration item group membership, or queues where you're calculating work item queue membership. And then also especially service level objectives. Every service level objective that you create in Service Manager results in six distinct workflows that are running behind the scenes. And so, you know, at first you're thinking like, oh, it's just a service level objective, but no, really, that's like six different workflows behind the scenes. As I see some people create like a service level objective for each one of their support groups, and they've got like 300 support groups. We just created 300 times six workflows, you know, so you got to kind of think about that. And then connectors also have an impact on performance. You know, we talked about kind of how to scope that down, run them during non-business hours, but that can have an impact on performance. Form customizations can have an impact on the user experience performance. The more form customizations you make, the longer it takes to render that form when you open it up in the UI. So customizations are, they're needed. Everybody does customizations. Nobody uses Service Manager as is out of the box. But knowing which types of customizations are good and bad for performance can be really helpful. So how many is too many? What I generally find is that if you have more than about 100 workflows running in your Service Manager system, you're probably going to start seeing performance issues after that. So think about how many combined workflows you have across queues and groups and notification subscriptions and custom workflows and service level objectives. And you know, you start to add up all those things. And if you're under 100, that's probably fine. If you start to get up above that, that can be an issue. And I've seen customers where they will create like three different queues and five different notification subscriptions for every support group they have, and they have like 250 support groups. And you start doing the math on that, and you end up with well over 1,000 quickly, and that's just way too much for a Service Manager to handle. So you have to start looking at other ways to be more efficient about doing those kinds of things. And one of the ways you can do that is by designing better workflows. So one of the examples that I see often is where people have a criteria for a workflow that says, whenever the classification changes from to A, then notify somebody. Or if the classification changes to B, notify somebody. And then they have like 150 different classifications. So they basically have a workflow for each of those classifications. So they have 150 different workflows that are running. And what you could do instead of doing it that way is you create one workflow, which is triggered whenever the classification changes. Regardless of what the value is, whenever it changes, trigger my workflow. And then in the workflow, you determine what the current value is. Is it A or is it B or is it C? And depending upon what the value is, then you send the notification to the right team or you apply the right template or whatever it is you need to do.
But by doing it that way, you end up with one workflow instead of 150. And the criteria evaluation that you're doing is happening in memory on the management server, where it's just looking at the current value of that particular classification and doing what it needs to do. That's a very fast operation happening on the management server in memory, as opposed to querying the SQL Server database all the time for incidents of a certain classification. So the thing you have to think about is that every subscription workflow in Service Manager, whether that's a notification subscription or a custom workflow or a service level objective, all those things, those are workflows, they're periodically querying the Service Manager database. And the Service Manager database is almost always the performance bottleneck in any Service Manager deployment. So you want to minimize the number of queries that are happening in the Service Manager database. All right, so one way that you can minimize the number of workflows that you have running in Service Manager is to use either SMA or Orchestrator. And so you can create one, as I mentioned, kind of workflow in Service Manager that calls out into something like SMA or Orchestrator and process some business logic there in SMA or Orchestrator and send your notifications or do your custom work out there. And that way, you minimize the number of queries that are happening inside of the Service Manager database. And you kind of offload that work to SMA or Orchestrator. And you can kind of scale up your SMA or Orchestrator. You have multiple, you know, runbook servers or whatever handling those types of workflows. And it gives you kind of a good way of scaling out some of that workload. I've seen a lot of customers use Orchestrator and now more and more SMA to do things like incident routing and classification, more complex notification subscriptions. They'll do those kinds of things inside of Orchestrator or SMA instead of having a Service Manager do those. Okay, then we can get into talking about the hardware that's used, right? So this is the out-of-the-box requirements for hardware. I'd say that in general, this is like the minimum, right? And if you have a small implementation of Service Manager, maybe 1,000 or up to 5,000 users or something, then this hardware is probably appropriate. If you're going to do 5, 10, 15, or more thousand, you probably should allocate more hardware to your deployment. So Andreas, when you did the 15,000, was it a lot more hardware than this? Uh-huh. Okay. How much RAM did you have on your SQL Server? Yeah. So even at 15,000, he was using 32 gigs of RAM on his SQL Server. He had three management servers. You know, so this is kind of a minimum recommendation, right? Okay. Your topologies can get really complex, something like this. You can scale out Service Manager onto lots and lots of different servers. You can have a SQL Server cluster for the Service Manager database. You can have a SQL Server cluster for each of the data warehouse databases if you want. Those can be separated out. You can have a management server farm if you want. They have multiple management servers that are each receiving queries from the Service Manager console. You can have your entire SQL reporting services infrastructure be organized in a farm with its own SQL cluster for the SQL reporting services database. So you can really scale out Service Manager onto a lot of servers if that's what you need to do. The flexibility to do that is there. It's not necessarily what you need to do, but the flexibility is there. It's just kind of good to know. Okay, now, as I mentioned, the Service Manager database is the bottleneck for performance in almost all cases. And so there's some SQL Server configuration best practices that I can share with you based on my testing as well as some testing done by Nate Lesnowski, who's one of our partners that we've done a very large deployment of Service Manager with. First of all, the default layout for the Service Manager database is to put the database file and the log file in the SQL directory on your C drive, whatever your program files directory is. And that is the default, but that is not a good choice. You want to put your data and log files on storage which is optimized for hosting databases. So typically that would be like a SAN or some kind of network attached storage or something where you've got multiple spindles to put your files on. You want to ideally separate your data file and your log file. Your log file is a sequential write file, so you're continuously writing information to that log file. You're never reading from it. So you want to put your log file on a RAID array that's optimized for writes. You don't care about reads. You want to write all the time. So put it on a RAID array that's optimized for writing. On your data log or your data file, that one you need to read and write from. So you want to put that on something like a RAID 5 or a RAID 10 configuration. So you want to kind of put those files into different places. And you also want to ideally pre-configure your database size. So by default, the database is set to auto-grow. Auto-grow takes I/O to calculate, auto-growing periodically. It's not a big deal, but it's better to have a fixed database size and monitor the size. And then if you need to, take a change request and increase the size of the database, you know, every 3 months or whatever it might be. But having a fixed size for your database will improve performance a little bit. Now, one other thing to think about is that, like, the transaction log size. So, you know, by default, the log size is about 20% of the database size. That's fine to get start with, but keep an eye on that. One of the things that people just really don't even think about is that there is a tempdb that is being used by Service Manager a lot. And that tempdb gets created at runtime. And that tempdb needs to be on fast storage as well. So you'll see that tempdb be created, and then you need to make sure that that tempdb is on a, you know, ideally like a RAID 5 or a RAID 10 array, so you get good read and write performance on that. And you can actually break down the tempdb into multiple DB files, and you could put those onto separate disk arrays. So that's something else to consider, is you can actually break that down into you know, multiple storage locations. Okay, then there's this max degree of parallelism setting. Some people say this improves performance. I haven't been able to verify that in my own testing, that it will improve performance. But you can configure this setting in SQL Server, and it will configure how many processes are used at the same time. And some people think that using more processors will improve performance to execute a single query. And some people think that it's actually better to have the affinity of having a single query run on a single core. So you can play around with this setting, but in my experience, it doesn't really improve performance. It might in your environment. Some people say it does. I haven't been able to prove that. Okay, so you typically want to see average disk seconds per read and write should be around 20 milliseconds. That's a good cue to look for. I'm going to kind of skip through some of these because they're, you know, we only have kind of a limited amount of time here. So in terms of consoles, you know, Microsoft has tested up to 100 consoles connecting to a management server. I think they'll tell you 80 or something like that in the documentation. The reality is you can have a lot more management servers than that connected to a single management server. I'd say you could do at least 250 consoles connected to a management server. It's not the management server that's the performance bottleneck, it's the database. And the only reason Microsoft really says 80 or 100 per management server or whatever it is because that's what they tested to. If they had tried testing higher, they would have found that you can actually do more management servers than that. It really all comes down to the database performance. So one thing to look at is the network latency between where you're using the console and the management server. If that network latency is greater than about 150 milliseconds, you should consider using something like an RDP session or a TS gateway or TS app or remote app, that kind of stuff, Citrix, because in that configuration, you're just pushing pixels down to the client instead of pushing all of the data. And so that's a better performance approach to use, although in general, all these types of approaches, VDI, those sorts of things, the performance of the Service Manager console is not good, especially like when you have a you know, like an application host, you know, whether it's a Citrix server or whatever, and it doesn't have graphics acceleration on it, you're going to have a major problem with people running multiple consoles on that remote app server. Okay, you got to have graphics acceleration on there. And you got to have lots and lots and lots of RAM in order to run in that type of configuration. So what I recommend for people that are in that situation is don't use the Service Manager console at all. Use something more like the Cyrosyn Analyst console, or GridPro has a version of it. In that case, you're sending HTML and data, and those applications are optimized for being used over high latency connections. So, you know, again, those are just kind of web application types of things. That's a much better way to go than trying to use a remote app type of configuration. One other kind of note on the Cyrosyn Analyst console and self-service portal is that there's an entire caching layer that happens there, which can offload a lot of the queries that are going to the Service Manager database. And so most of the queries that are actually happening from the Cyrosyn portal are happening on that cache database instead of going to the Service Manager database. So that can help improve performance quite a bit as well, both in terms of the user experience performance in the portal, as well as because you offload all those queries from the Service Manager database will perform better itself. Okay, a few notes on, let's see, we got time. All right, so a few notes on console optimization. I see people, okay, so one thing, up until Service Manager 2012, UR2, there was a bug in the Service Manager console where when it was maximized, it would run about 20% slower. Kind of a random bug, had to do with the Windows Presentation Foundation framework. So if you're still running on an older version of Service Manager, run your console not completely maximized. Resize it so it fills up most of your screen, but not completely maximized, and you'll see a dramatic improvement in performance. It's a simple little thing, but it actually improves performance quite a bit. You also should use search more than I see people using it. I see people, like if they want to find an incident, right? They're like, okay, I need to find incident IR1234. So what do? They go to the all incidents view. And so now they've just queried the entire incident table in the Service Manager database and brought it back to the client. Well, it's only 500 records because it's limited by default. But you went and got all this data. And then you type in the header bar, IR1234, in that kind of filter bar. And then it filters it down to that particular incident. OK, well, that wasn't very efficient. If you go to the upper right corner of the Service Manager console, there's a whole search box right there. If you type in IR1234 right there and hit Enter, it'll bring back just that one incident. It's faster, and it doesn't have nearly as big of a performance impact on the database or the management server or the network. So think about trying to use search more instead of going and getting all this data and then filtering it client-side. I see the same kind of thing happening when people write PowerShell commands in workflows, is they'll do like a get SCSM object, and they'll retrieve all of the incidents. And then they pipe it to a where object, you know, where the ID equals IR1234. Well, now you just grabbed all that data, and then you're filtering it client-side. Instead, you should say get SCSM object dash filter ID equals IR1234, and that'll get you just that one incident, right? So try to think about, you know, am I bringing all that data down and filtering it client-side, or am I using the power of SQL Server to get me the data that I want and only send the piece of data that I want on the wire? Let's see. Okay, one other thing that I see quite often is where people will use type projections in their view criteria. So a type projection is basically a way to say, I want to get the data from the database about a particular object and the objects that are related to it. So an example would be an incident type projection where I get the incident object itself, but I also want to get the assigned to user, the primary owner, the affected user, the affected CIs. I want to get all those related objects as well, and I want to get them back as basically one big object. And so a type projection allows you to define the shape of the data that you want to have brought back. So when you go to define a view, you can choose to use a type projection as part of the criteria. And if you choose a type projection, then you can choose properties of the related objects that you want to show as a column in the view. So let's say, for example, that I chose to create a view based on the incident advanced type projection. Okay, so now I can use, as part of my criteria, I can say I want all the incidents where the affected user's domain is Redmond, for example. And that's fine. That may be your criteria. But that type projection is also being used to determine the shape of the data that's being returned. The advanced type projection will return back all of the action log entries, all of the file attachments, all of the related users, all the related config items, all the related work items, and basically everything about that incident, even if you're not showing it in the view. You're not going to show the action log comments in the view, right? You're not going to show the file attachments in the view, but yet you're returning all that data to the Service Manager console unnecessarily, and that will take a very long time to pull that quantity of data down. So when you're creating a view in the Service Manager console, you ideally want to create it against just the class, just the incident class. I want my criteria is all incidents where the title contains bananas, and then you use properties of the incident class as the columns. If you do need to use related object properties as part of your criteria, or you want to have them in the view, then choose a type projection which contains only the data that you need to use for your criteria or as a column in the view. There's a couple of blog posts that I put out there that have management packs attached to them that you can import into Service Manager that have different combinations of related objects in your type projections that you can use to choose a type projection that only will return back the data that you actually need. All right. The portal performance. The portal performance is really, really, really bad. it's bad. So there's a couple reasons for that. One is that it's built on SharePoint. So first of all, you're bringing in all this SharePoint framework every time you load a page. Secondly, it's based on Silverlight, which could be a good thing, but the way that it was actually implemented, it makes it a bad thing. For example, one of the bad things that it does is anytime you load a service catalog page inside of the self-service portal that's provided out of the box, it will download all of the service offerings and all of the request offerings and all of their icons, even if you're only looking at the first page of the service offering categories, right? It's downloading all that content every time you load the page. And so especially when you're on a slow connection and you have a big service catalog, that can take a very long time to download, and it's going to do it every single time you load the page. It doesn't cache that information at all. So in general, the out-of-the-box portal performance is really, really bad, and there's really not anything you can do about it. The only thing you can really do about it is to go and get one of the third-party portals that are out there that provide much better performance. They're based on HTML5, and that's really all you can do. So definitely recommend that. All right. Okay. So now I want to wrap up with explaining some testing that I did at Microsoft about a year before I left Microsoft. I had this feeling, like people were contacting me all the time, like, oh, my performance is bad with Service Manager, whatever. I was like, you know what? Something isn't right here. And so I had a mission. I went to the Enterprise Engineering Center at Microsoft, and I asked them to give me some really good hardware, and I was going to performance test Service Manager at a really big scale and figure out what the performance bottlenecks were, and then I was going to tell everybody in the whole world about them. So here I am today. I'm going to tell you about my testing experience and the test results and what I did to get really good performance at really big scale. So what I did is I got this hardware. So we'll go through the hardware that I had to test with first. So I got a Dell Compellent SAN, It had two Compellent Series 40 controllers. This is actually probably at least 2 years ago. So this hardware isn't even like the most recent, latest, and greatest hardware. It had five storage enclosures. It had 12 gig cache. It had an 8 gig fiber channel. And it had 120 total disks. And I had the whole thing all to myself, which is great. Obviously, that's not very realistic to have an entire Dell Compellent SAN all to yourself for just Service Manager. But that's what I had. And I'll show you kind of the disk I/O that I had. And if you can match that disk I/O in a shared SAN, then that's fine. It's the same thing, right? So this is the I/O that I saw. So I would use the SQLIO.exe test tool to figure out what the IOPS were that I was seeing on the storage that was provided to me. So you can see here that's actually really good storage. So you can compare your storage to what I did if you want to. You can go and run the SQLIO tool, figure out what the IOPS are on your disk subsystem, and compare that to what I had. And depending upon what you've got and how much it's shared and so on, and you may have as good a performance as what I had for your disks. Then, as I discussed, I moved the log files. So I moved the log files, I moved the tempdb files, I put them on different parts of the storage. So I spread out the access to those data files across multiple parts of the storage. And then as far as the servers that I had, so I had six servers. The first server I used was a Service Manager database SQL server. The second one was for all the data warehouse databases. I had another SQL server for that. And then I had two VM hosts. They were Windows Server 2012 Data Center at the time. So it was before Windows Server 2012 R2. And then I had an Active Directory DNS DHCP box that I set up my own little domain in. And then I had a jump box, which just allowed me to connect from the corporate network into this test environment. And those servers were all DL580G7s. They had 32 cores in them. They were all 2.0 gigahertz. And I had 128 gigs of RAM on each of those servers. So I had a total of, you know, what you see here. So it's a lot of RAM. It's a lot of hardware. But as you'll see in a minute here, I didn't necessarily use all of it. So these are the VMs that I had. So on VM host 1, I had SCSM 1, which was 16 vCPUs and 32 gigs of RAM. I had a similar one for SCSM 2 and 3. And I made one of those be the workflow server, and the other two were the console servers that I connected to. And then there was a data warehouse management server that had a similar configuration. And then on VM host 2, this is where I had a couple of VMs that were my load generating VMs. So I created a tool that I'll show you here in a minute that would generate load according to the parameters that I told it to. And then I had an Exchange VM so that I was sending out notifications from Service Manager as, you know, trying to create a complete test. Okay, so then I started to populate Service Manager. So I've created 200,000 users in my Active Directory. I had 100,000 groups in there. And I created an Active Directory connector, and I synced all that data into Service Manager. And then to get computers in there, I created a CSV data import, and I put 200,000 computers into Service Manager. And then I initially populated the database with 120,000 incidents, 3,000 problems, a bunch of service requests, just to kind of get a baseline of work item data into the system. And then I created a bunch of workflows. So I created 92 notification subscriptions and 88 queues. These were all kind of organized around different categories of work item types and so on. So I created this workload of notification subscriptions and queues. And then I hooked up my tool to it. So I think I've now published this tool on CodePlex. You can go grab it if you want. It's a little hard-coded to my test environment, like has the domain name kind of hard-coded in there, some things like that. But if you have some development skills, you can take that code base, you can tweak it to match your own needs, and then you can have this load generation tool that you can point at Service Manager and generate a whole lot of load and kind of just test the performance and scalability of it. So this is what the tool looks like. This is the GUI for the tool. You can see some of the parameters that it has here. So you can tell it to create a connection to service manager, a management group object. You can tell it to do it on a certain schedule. Like in this particular case, the default is like every 1 minute, create a new connection to service manager. So you can kind of slowly ramp up the number of consoles that are connected to service manager. You can tell each load testing tool which management server to connect to. You can specify what number of hours there are in a working day to simulate the rate of work items that are generated and updated and so on. And you know, you can kind of see all the different parameters you've got here. And the idea with this is that you can start to have these, what it does is it spawns off a like an application, an exe instance called the loadgen.exe. Actually, it's loader.exe. And what I would do is I would spin off like hundreds of those. And they would each run in their own process. They'd each run as their own identity. And they would connect to service manager. And depending upon the parameters, they would create new work items based on templates. They would update existing work items. And the idea was just to simulate as much as possible what the normal transaction activity would be on service manager with users using the system. So let's talk about the test results. So what I did was I tested 700 concurrent loader utilities, right? So that was happening per management server. Okay, so you know, I said earlier that Microsoft tells you it's 100. Well, I did 700 per management server. And I just broke down the workload. I had 70% of those loader processes working on incidents, 10% working on change requests, 10% working on service requests, 7% on problem, and 3% on release. And if you kind of multiply out everything that was happening, it was creating, you know, 840,000 incidents per month. Right? So anybody here have an organization that's generating 840,000 incidents per month? Probably not even close to that, right? 42,000 change requests, 42,000 service requests, 25,000 problems. So it's like 28,000 incidents per day, or 3,500 per hour. And basically, if you kind of do the math backwards from the assumptions I talked about earlier, that works out to about an organization of 420,000 people using Service Manager. That's a really big organization. That's like Department of Defense big in the United States. That's enormous. And during that period, you know, all the workflows, the connectors, the notification subscriptions, all that was running, and I was sending out 153 notifications per minute and 87.5 queue updates per minute. So a work item was being added to the queue or removed from the queue based upon the updates that were happening. So with that testing, the result was that this was the timings, right? So how long did it take to get an incident query out of the database? So this would be like if you were to go to an incident view and get 40 incidents out of the database, how long would that take? That would take 0.15 seconds. How long would it take to get just one incident? That would take 0.12 seconds. And I had this process where it would go through in sequence and it would like create a work item, then it would wait for a little while and it'd update something about it, and it would wait a little while and update something more about it. And if you kind of took all the time that would take, including all of the waiting time, that would, you know, in a perfect world, take 240 seconds. Well, in the testing that I was doing, it was taking 240.5 seconds. So it's basically taking 0.5 seconds to do all these different transactions within that 240 second period. So basically, in summary, the performance was really good in this test. So what did I do to actually get to, oh, and here's the utilization numbers that we saw. So the data access service on the management server was only consuming 1.3 gigabytes of RAM. Management configuration service was less than a gig of RAM. And the SQL server utilization, the CPU utilization was under 8%. The network utilization was basically 0%. The disks, the active time was between 10 and 15%. The disk queue length was always less than 2. You know, so like even the SQL performance was very good at this scale. Now, all that being said, when I first started doing the test, these were not the results. They were much, much worse than this when I first started doing the test. And I had to make some changes to Service Manager in order to get to this performance. The first thing that I did was I disabled the priority calculation rule. So there's a workflow in Service Manager that every time an incident is created, it calculates the priority of that incident. Well, in most cases, that's not necessary because the client is already calculating the priority and submitting the priority value at the time that the incident is created. And so having this secondary workflow running on every incident that's creating and calculating the priority is unnecessary. So that's a lot of workflow executions when it happens on every single incident creation. So I disabled that using a management pack override. Similarly, there's another workflow, which is the first assigned relationship workflow. And what this does is it looks for the relationship of an incident to an assigned to user to be created. And when it sees that, it sets the first assigned to like date time value on the incident, which is handy if you want to track that for service level objectives or something like that. But if you're not using that date time value, that first assigned date time value for anything, then you should disable this rule because it's running on all the time and it's just taking up cycles. So again, you can disable that using management pack overrides. The next thing is the implied permissions workflow, and this is probably actually the biggest performance impact of anything that I found. And so basically there's some workflow that are running behind the scenes all the time, and they're calculating what's called implied permissions. And implied permissions basically says that if you're related to a particular object by a particular relationship type, then you have certain permissions on that object. So an example of that is whoever the affected user is for an incident, they have permission to view and edit that incident. Otherwise, you'd have to create a queue of work items and grant them to every single user and say, okay, you're allowed to access all of the incidents where the affected user is Travis, and then you would assign that queue to me. And that would just be a huge number of queues, and that would be a dumb way of doing it. But the implied permissions basically says if you're related to an object like an incident by a certain relationship type, then you have certain permissions on that object. Well, that implied permissions calculation takes up a huge amount of compute power. And so I disabled that because not everybody really needs that to be working, because you can create queues of work items and assign them to users and have your security controlled that way instead of using implied permissions. So that whole conversation is a very deep conversation. We could get into that if you want to on a one-on-one basis, but that is the number one performance impact of everything that I discovered. Okay, so I disabled that using a management pack as well, similar to the other ones that I disabled. And one of the most important things that I disabled was the user preference implied permission, because you really don't need that one. And that one exists for every user object that you have in the system. And so disabling that one can be a big performance improvement, and you really don't need it. Okay, then I minimized the group calculation interval. So group calc by default in Service Manager runs every 30 seconds. And you may not really necessarily need your groups to be calculated that frequently. So I changed mine to 600,000, which is every 10 minutes. Right? So I really don't need my groups to be calculated often. Change that, it will dramatically reduce the amount of database query time that's happening. Or even better, you could just disable it and run it periodically. There are some blog posts that I've written on troubleshooting workflows that you can use. There's a link to one of them here. There's a couple of other ones. And that's a good way to find out which workflows are causing performance problems and figure out why. So you can kind of check that out. And then I won't get into studying the watermark just because we're running out of time here. I did tweak the batch size on some of the workflows that I had, and in particular, this one here, which is the CI list rule. Okay, so this one, I just changed the batch size on it. By default, I think it's 100, and I changed it to 1,000. And so what that basically means is that instead of processing them 100 at a time, it would process them 1,000 at a time. And so you can increase the batch size on some of these workflows that you have to have it process things in much bigger batches. And then one other problem I found was that the transform job in the data warehouse it was limited to 50,000 items being transformed at a time. And at the rate that I was creating work items, the transform job was not able to keep up with the rate that I was creating things. And so I changed the transform job to process things in batches of 100,000 instead of 50,000. Okay, so now, what did the performance actually look like at that scale? I think it's kind of an interesting thing to see. Oh, come on. Oops. Wow, that's lame. See if I have something else about this. Okay, I guess I won't show you the video. If you want to see the video, you can come up here and I'll show you. Maybe it'll run in Windows. Oh, here we go. Okay, so this is Service Manager running at scale with 240,000 consoles, if you will, connected to it and running data. And this is what the console user experience looks like when I'm running at that scale. And you can see that although it's not as fast as everybody would like, it's really not any slower than what you would normally experience in a Service Manager production environment, even at this scale. And you can see the CPU utilization here is, you know, under 10%. The disk, you know, is looking good. Network utilization is, you know, only 50 megabits per second. Memory's holding steady. the disk reads per second is like under 10 for the data and the log files and so on. So the performance was very good with this hardware, with these tweaks that I made. And so really what it comes down to is if you have slow performance in your Service Manager environment, it's probably a matter of configuration. There's either some workflows that you've added to the system that are slowing things down, or you don't have your database files allocated correctly on the storage in order to get the best performance, or you have high network latency. You know, there's probably something that is in your environment that's not quite right that you could change and get much better performance with Service Manager. Some things that you can't change and get better performance are like the portal, and the console performance is really not that great. So in that situation, I would actually, and there's really nothing you can do about it. So in that situation, I'd recommend using something like the third-party solutions that are out there, because those are designed to have much better performance. So, but it is possible to have good Service Manager performance. It does take a little bit of tweaking and know-how on what to do. And if anybody wants any of the details on how to do these tweaks, like you want the management pack that has the rule disable overrides in it, or you, whatever information you need, just contact me. I'll put my contact info up here next. And I'd be happy to share any of those kind of tools or management packs or whatever it is that you want to have in order to get to better performance. So I know that was a lot of information. Hopefully most of it made sense. Like I said, I'm happy to help you kind of help get your performance better in Service Manager. So that's it. Thank you, guys.